It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. As the Canada Post strike enters its third week, local nonprofit and charity organizations are seeing an impact on their donations and annual fundraisers. The strike comes at a critical time of the year for many charities. According to surveys conducted by the Association of Fundraising Professionals, many charities receive at least half of their annual donations during the final 3 months of the year, with December being the most important month. According to a poll conducted for Canada Helps in 2023, nearly a quarter of Canadians expect to require charitable services for basic needs such as food, shelter, and health services. As for Kingston's local organizations, many have already experienced or anticipate an impact on their donations. Courtney Murphy with Onguinata Resource Center, an organization dedicated to supporting people with developmental disabilities in Kingston, expressed that they have already seen an impact on their donations.
Onguinata does receive donations via mail, and it has been impacting our organization. As you know, this time of year is when a lot of people tend to give, so it has impacted us. People, for some reason, are still hesitant, we find, to donate online, even though it's a secure transaction. I think it has to do with demographics. The older demographic tends to be a little bit more hesitant about those online donations.
The Kingston Humane Society, normally in the full swing of their annual fundraiser, have been seeing a significant decline in donations. Executive Director Gord Hunter had the following to say on the topic. Have you experienced or do you foresee an impact on donations due to the Canada Post strike?
We have experienced a significant impact to this point, Christina. So normally by now we'd be 2 weeks into our direct mail campaign, and we would see probably in the neighborhood already of about $30,000 in donations. We haven't reached the $20,000 mark yet, so we are significantly behind, and I firmly believe that the large majority of the reason for that is we can't get any mail in. So a lot of our donors, especially the donors who donate larger amounts, like 250, 500, mm-hmm. sometimes even 1,000, they donate by check. And when they do that, obviously they mail it in, and we've gotten no mail. So it's had a really substantial impact on our campaign to this point.
Are the holidays normally a large influx for you for donations?
Yeah, so this direct mail campaign, we send out usually the second or third week in November. And we do that because people are more inclined to give at this time of year, but also they're thinking about, you know, we're able to give them a tax receipt. So they're thinking about, you know, end of year and getting their any donations they want to get, getting tax receipts so that they can claim that on their income tax, which is great. It's a win-win for us and for the donors. So normally we get in the neighborhood of $130,000 to $140,000 from this campaign, which is 25% of our general donations for the entire year. So it's our biggest fundraiser by far. It's our most important fundraiser by far. And it's one that I think people really enjoy participating in at this time of year.
CFRC also received a written statement from Salvation Army Kingston, reporting that their numbers are down this year at the start of their annual hamper and toy drive campaigns. They anticipate a significant impact as many of their donors mail in their donations. However, in spite of the challenges introduced by the strike, Kingston organizations and donors have been finding creative ways to carry on with fundraising efforts. Organizations shared how they have adapted by sending additional digital newsletters, making calls, adding drop-off sites, accepting donations over the phone, and making it easier to donate online. Executive Director Gord Hunter explained how the Kingston Humane Society was able to partner with local pet stores to collect donations.
One of the things that really kind of lifted my heart was we had a recent finance committee meeting, and our treasurer said, why don't we see if the local pet stores will accept envelopes for us? Because a lot of our donors, obviously, are animal owners as well, and they're going to get pet food and restock, and they can take their checks in, drop them off if the pet stores are willing to take them, and then we can go pick them up. Sure enough, when I reached out to them the next day after that finance committee meeting, 7 pet stores stepped up right away and said, absolutely, we'll do this. So we pretty much have the geography of Kingston covered in terms of the pet stores that are willing to take in envelopes, sealed envelopes with checks in them as donations for that campaign. So we're really hopeful that that gives people an outlet until the strike is over. To know that our community partners and supporters are so willing to step up and help, it really, like I said, it really made us feel good about our chances of reaching our goal for the campaign.
Dan Irwin, executive director with Partners in Mission Food Bank, also stated he's hopeful donors will find ways around the strike.
Kingstonians have always found a way to help us and ensure we're well supported, which we're very grateful for. So I suspect they will be resilient and find some ways to get their money to us again.
Partners in Mission Food Bank is officially making the move to a new, larger space to accommodate for increased demand. Partners in Mission is currently located at 140 Hickson Avenue and has been there since 2003. However, as demand continues to rise in the Kingston community, with the organization helping over 8,000 Kingstonians in 2023, Partners in Mission now finds themselves in need for more space for storage, volunteers, and those seeking services. It has been announced that in 2025, Partners in Mission will be making the move just 25 meters away to 4 Harvey Street. I sat down with Dan Irwin, Executive Director of Partners in Mission Food Bank, to discuss the move. Partners in Mission is officially set to move to a new location. What challenges are you experiencing at your current location that made you decide this is a needed change?
Yeah, well, we're in what's going to be our 4th year in a row with record numbers, and we've just maxed out at what we can do here. Unfortunately, we're so full that our clients are unable to come into the building, so they're waiting outside in all sorts of terrible weather, and that's just not something we're comfortable with. So our new space is going to enable our clients to come inside. It's a shopping model, so they'll be able to choose the food they want, so it's going to be a much better experience for them.
And the new location is just a few meters up the street. How much more space will this provide? What's the jump here?
Yeah, so we're going to double our space. Our total square footage in this building is just around 8,000, and the new building will be 17,500.
Were the funds for this move achieved through fundraising?
Yeah, so we've known that this building had limitations and that we were growing so fast. So we've been trying to put money away. So that's what we've been working towards. We're also fundraising right now to help with the renovations. We're looking for $1 million for our renovations. We're at right around the $350,000 mark. So we're still got a ways to go to help us to get these renovations paid for.
And you will still be at your current location during the busy holiday season. What challenges does that present, and what's the plan for the next few months?
Yeah, so right now you're right. We're at the busy season, so it's going to get very full in here. We've got some awesome volunteers, 130 of them, who are doing their best to squeeze in here and there, and we're going to do that. That's kind of what we do here. We play the Jenga game, and we manage to get everything stacked up safely, and we still help the clients that need it. We'll be here until we're expecting a move date sometime in March. We'll firm that up as we get closer. We're just going to tighten it up, and we'll make it do.
How can folks donate if they'd like to support the move?
If they want to help support us, they go to kingstonfoodbank.ca, and there's a donate button, and right there they hit that donate button and make a donation to us. If I can also add, if anyone needs help, they should call us. We're in a busy time, so you need to call us as soon as possible, 613-544-4100, and that's Monday to Friday.
Once again, that was Executive Director Dan Irwin with Partners in Mission Food Bank, sitting down with CFRC to discuss the organization's move to a new and larger space in the spring. Partners in Mission is currently sitting just above the $250,000 mark on their way to fundraising $1 million for renovations. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hello, Queens. This is Isabella Garrido, your CFRC sports reporter, coming to you with the latest updates from the world of Gales athletics. Welcome to the CFRC Sports Desk, where we keep you up to speed on all the action. Let's dive into this weekend's highlights as we head into our winter break. We'll start on the ice, where the Queens Gales women's hockey team closed out the first half of their season with a thrilling 4-2 victory over the York Lions in Toronto. Despite a late arrival due to weather delays, the Gales wasted no time, jumping to an early lead and setting the tone with a dominant first period. Sophie Hudson opened the scoring over just a minute and contributed to two more goals before leaving late in the third with an injury. Final frame saw the Lions push back, but a clutch empty netter by Taya Leonard sealed the win. This team heads into the break with momentum, but are anticipating their return to action on January 10th, hosting York at the Memorial Center. Shifting gears to the hardwood, Queens men's basketball secured a nail-biting 70-69 win against the McMaster Marauders on Saturday. It was a game of streaks, with the Gales building an early lead before McMaster clawed back to even the score by the fourth quarter. In the end, strong performances from Ollie Engine, Luca Silas, and AJ Cumming kept Queens on top. The Gales now sit at 9-1 on the season and second in the OUA East Division. Not to be outdone, the Queens women's basketball team swept their weekend road series, defeating McMaster 60-56. Key contributions came from Brooke Hussey off the bench with 16 points, Michaela McFarlane with 14, and Katrina Renan's double-double of 13 points and 12 rebounds. Gales finished their first half on an 8-game win streak and an 8-2 record, sitting third in the OUA East. On the volleyball court, Queens women's volleyball continue their dominant run, picking up their 7th straight set win of the season over the Toronto Varsity Blues. Mary Stewart and Hannah Ducheneau led the offense with 12 and 9 kills, respectively, while Claire Carter delivered 5 service aces, including a critical one to secure the second set. With an 11-1 record and 9-game win streak, the Gales head into the break ranked first in the OUA. That's your sports recap. This has been Isabella Garrido with your CFRC Sports Desk. Now back to Christina Laurie for your weather report.
Thank you, Isabella. Now it's time for your CFRC weather report for this evening. Tonight, we're expecting snow squalls and flurries, changing to flurries at times, heavy overnight. We're expecting about 5 to 10 centimeters of snow tonight. Winds will be 30 kilometers per hour, gusting to 50, and we have a low of 0 degrees. On Thursday, December 5th, we have mainly cloudy skies with a 40% chance of flurries in the morning and early in the afternoon. We'll have periods of light snow beginning in the afternoon. Winds will be 30 kilometers per hour, gusting to 50, and we have a high of +1 and a UV index of 1 or low. As for the evening, we're expecting clear skies with a low of -10. On Friday, December 6th, we're expecting increasing cloudiness and a high of -3. Friday night, cloudy skies with a 30% chance of flurries and a low of -3. On Saturday, December 7th, we'll have cloudy skies with a 40% chance of flurries and a high of +1. Saturday night, cloudy skies with a 40% chance of flurries and a low of -5. Finishing off the week, on Sunday, December 8th, we're expecting cloudy skies with a high of 0, and Sunday night, cloudy skies with a low of 0. That wraps up your quick weather report for this evening, and next up is your CFRC traffic report with Jessie Bell.
This is Jessie Bell with your traffic report for the week of December 2nd, 2024. We begin with a quick note from the Ministry of Transportation. Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard westbound off-ramp will be closed from Monday, December 2nd at 8 p.m. to Tuesday, December 3rd at 6 a.m. to complete line painting on the off-ramp. Other road closures. Abidon Road, Highway 2 to Middle, will be closed to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert, is closed until December 31st to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Collingwood Street, Earl to Union, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th, is closed for buried infrastructure replacement. Road will be open to local traffic, however. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick, is closed to accommodate a water main replacement. Union Street, Willingdon to Albert, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And University Avenue, Union to Earl, is closed for construction related to the Queens J-Duck project. Here are some other delays to keep an eye on this week. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Bayridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor begins Phase 2 of the Bayridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles to Edwin and Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes Phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal updates, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abidon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road. And that's a wrap for your City of Kingston traffic report for the week of Monday, December 2nd, 2024. This is Jesse Bell from CFRC 101.9 FM, and this is your weekly events calendar. On Monday, December 2nd, The Brass and One-Eyed Jacks will host their weekly trivia game starting at 7 and 7:45 p.m., respectively. On Tuesday, December 3rd, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. Also on Tuesdays from 4 to 5 p.m., there is a newcomer men's group hosted by Immigrant Services Kingston and Area, where newcomer men can meet other newcomers at 837 Princess Street. Daft Brewing is also hosting its Euchre Night starting at 7 p.m. On Wednesday, December 4th, Something in the Water Brewing and Daft Brewing will also host their trivia nights starting at 7 p.m., and One-Eyed Jacks will host its North End Board Games Night for free, also starting at 7 p.m. On Thursday, December 5th and Friday, December 6th, the Kingston Grand Theater will host the State Ballet Theater of Ukraine and The Nutcracker. The performance features a 50-dancer ballet troupe, a brand new set, and over 200 exclusive costumes created especially for this production. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are available online via the Kingston Grand Theater website. On Thursdays, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. And of course, the Grad Club is running its free and hugely popular weekly trivia night every Thursday starting at 8 p.m. On Friday, December 6th, City Hall will be illuminated white and purple for the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. White and purple ribbons are worn on this day to remember the 14 female engineering students who were murdered at École Polytechnique de Montréal on December 6, 1989, in an act of gender-based violence. It is also a day to reflect on all women whose lives have been harmed or lost to gender-based violence. Saturday, December 7th marks the beginning of Downtown Kingston's free trolley and carriage rides program. Experience the magic of Downtown Kingston in winter. Pickup and drop-off is at Springer Market Square. And finally, on Sunday, December 8th, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. Have a concert or event you would like to add to our online and on-air concert and events calendar? Reach out today via CFRC.ca, and don't forget to follow CFRC on Instagram at CFRC Music.
Thank you, Jesse. Now for your concerts lineup this week. Tonight, presented by KPP Concerts and Flying V Productions, the Great Lakes Swimmers will be performing at the Broom Factory at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $30. Tonight at 10:30 p.m., you can head to the Buckle to catch Whiskey Smoke, playing some country tunes. This is a free event. Tomorrow on Thursday, December 5th, presented by KPP Concerts, Texas King and Feral Minx will be performing at the Broom Factory. Show starts at 7:30 p.m. and tickets are $20. Also tomorrow, Taylor Swift Band will be playing at the Buckle from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. free of charge. On Friday, December 6th, at the club at the RCHA, A Celtic Christmas with Turpin's Trail. Tickets are $20 and show starts at 8 p.m. Also on Friday, December 6th, at the Spire, A Miss Emily Christmas, where Miss Emily will be performing new and old holiday tunes. Tickets are $31.59 and the show starts at 7 p.m. Also every Friday, the Celtic Kitchen Party plays traditional and contemporary Celtic, Irish, and Scottish covers and originals at Tiernanog, starting at 9 p.m. and running until 12 a.m. for free. On Saturday, December 7th, you can catch the Gertrudes, an exciting and unique music collective from Kingston's Skeleton Park neighborhood, performing at the Hotel Wolf Island. This show is entry by donation and starts off at 4 p.m. You can also head to the Spire on Sunday for Holiday Magic. Orchestra Kingston rings in the holidays with the Melodia Choir and Ronan Hendry. Show runs from 2:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. and general admission is $25. For seniors and students, it's going to be $20. That wraps up your quick concert roundup for this evening. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Hey everyone, this is Joseph Guido. I am CFRC's Airwave YGK Musicians in Residence Project Intern. Do you love local music and supporting local arts? CFRC's annual funding drive is running until December 31st, and your gift is needed to help us provide local musicians with modern, top-of-the-line equipment, space, and technical support to better showcase their creativity on our airwaves all year round. Help us raise $25,000 this year. Make your gift today via cfrc.ca.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Sheep and Wolf's Clothing's latest single, When Echoes Speak, released on November 18th. The track opens with a mechanical winding sound captured from a clicker borrowed from the artist's workplace, which evolves into the rhythmic backbone of the intro. Inspired by the theme song of Rascal Does Not Dream, the bridge section shifts into a more rhythmic, aggressive reimagining. The final 75 seconds feature intricate polymetric layers and different meters with various instruments, building on a foundation of claps, creating a dense, complex timbre. A unique fusion of virtual and live instruments, the song delivers depth in both tone and rhythm. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream When Echoes Speak on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Cold weather getting you down? Warm up this season with amazing hot food to go at Old Farm Fine Foods. Pizza, frittata, sausage rolls, sandwiches, soups, and more are ready and waiting to get in your belly. Plus, you can also buy fresh and frozen foods to prepare at home and enjoy a huge selection of meats, cheeses, produce, coffee, beverages, and condiments. Pop into the shop Monday through Saturday between 8 and 5 at 204 Berry Street in downtown Kingston. And don't forget to follow Old Farm Fine Foods on Instagram at OldFarmFF. To get the scoop on the latest goodies. Old Farm Fine Foods, comfort food you can count on.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Hey everyone, this is Joseph Guido. I am CFRC's Airwave YGK Musicians in Residence Project Intern. Do you love local music and supporting local arts? CFRC's annual funding drive is running until December 31st, and your gift is needed to help us provide local musicians with modern, top-of-the-line equipment, space, and technical support to better showcase their creativity on our airwaves all year round. Help us raise $25,000 this year. Make your gift today via CFRC.ca.
This is CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus and community radio station, broadcast from the basement of Kerutas Hall, Queen's University, Kingston. You can also hear this program locally on Cogeco Cable, channel 282, and is streamed online at cfrc.ca.
Welcome to Biotech Bit. This is your host, Christoph. Today we will hear a talk by Kevin Bradley on the topic sleep apnea and diabetes. This program was produced and distributed by American Sleep Apnea Association. Before that, here are a few messages.
Tree Canada's National Greening Program is planting seedlings across five regions of the country: BC, the Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic. They plant in areas that are in need of reforestation or afforestation across Canada. Tree Canada selects sites where appropriate native species will be planted to make sure that natural forests come back to life. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband Tom and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it. So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
CFRC is active on every social media platform. Check us out at CFRC Radio on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and on Twitter at CFRC.
So we'll reiterate again, just for our population out there, maybe new members who aren't familiar, but we will discuss what exactly is sleep apnea. We will discuss what diabetes is and the two types, and how are they linked. So there is some research out there that I've been doing over the last couple of weeks when we were working on the slides. So I will refer to some notes and some data that I'll present. And we'll bring it back to a personal level as well, where Justine can share experiences with people that she knows that have both syndromes. So next slide. So again, sleep apnea, if we look at it, is pauses during our sleep cycles. So basically, when someone is diagnosed with sleep apnea, it's because they're stopping breathing and actually cutting off their airway at least five or six times every hour. So for me, actually, for a sleep apnea patient like myself, we talk about the apnea hypopneic index. And when we look at that, my reading was 5 to 10 each hour. So I was having an episode of 5 to 10 times where I would actually stop breathing. This does lead to hypoxia. So you may have heard that term used before. And hypoxia, just generally speaking, is the shortage of oxygen in the body. It can affect our well-being. It can affect the oxygen to all our organs and brain. And that's why there is a correlation to many comorbidities when we look at sleep apnea. One of the series we did do before, and you might want to check it out, is also the link between sleep apnea and hypertension. So hypertension is quite common, unfortunately, in our sleep apnea population. Basically, it is high blood pressure that is uncontrolled, and they feel there is a great link between sleep apnea and high blood pressure. Physiological, the terms that we're going to use today, is just normal functions of the living organisms and their part. So if we think about our physiological well-being and we think about good sleep, that's when actually the body repairs itself. I think I said before, a lot of people think that when we're asleep, everything shuts down. But your body is actually a little machine working at night, repairing organs, getting good oxygenation to organs, regulating hormone balance, for example, so that the next day you're waking up refreshed and ready to tackle all that life throws at you. So next slide, please. So when we talk about diabetes, the pancreas is the organ in question. Okay, so the pancreas is the organ that converts what we eat as energy, and it converts it into our fuel for our body. It also produces insulin. So insulin is the hormone that's actually made by the pancreas. You'll hear the term insulin resistance, and that's basically usually in type 2 diabetes when the body is actually not producing enough insulin and it's actually resistant to the insulin that it does reduce, therefore leading to an increase in blood sugar. Hyperglycemia is that raised glucose level in the blood, so you'll hear that term thrown out a lot. And of course, hypoglycemia is the lower end of glucose in your blood. So that can be, both can be actually pretty critical. A lot of times when people have type 1 diabetes and maybe they've overshot their insulin, for example, or they're not eating a regular meal, can actually have episodes of hypoglycemic attacks. It's that feeling of like you may have been gone all day, not eating, not drinking too much, and you just feel off, you feel dizzy, you feel nauseous. That's the signs and symptoms of hypoglycemia, so that real hunger pang. So next slide, please.
I had a quick question. You describe some of the feelings that you would have with hypo, correct?
Yeah.
That's what we just said. Is it similar for if you're hyperglycemic, if you have a raise, is it the same things that someone would be feeling, you know, maybe a little foggy, a little nauseous, or is it a different spectrum?
You know, it's a great question, Justine, and both are quite similar in their presentation. The hyperglycemia can actually be, there's a term called ketoacidosis, where the body is actually breaking down fat that's stored, and people have that high blood sugar where you can actually smell it off someone's breath. Actually, it's a phenomenon that, you know, a doctor or nurse would diagnose and say someone is in ketoacidosis. So the presentations are quite similar. There's confusion. There's thirst. There's disorientation. And I guess when I talked, oddly enough, to one of the dietitians recently about this, if someone presents with either hypo or hyperglycemia, but it's not evident at the time, it's best to treat the hypoglycemia, if that makes sense, because that actually is more critical when you're not getting that blood and sugar to the brain. Someone can lose consciousness quite quickly. With hyperglycemia, the main treatment would be insulin, of course. Okay, but hypo, you need food. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So So what we do know is, besides many risks of sleep apnea, and you know, we've talked about many of the risks here on our series, diabetes ranks as one of the more common ones. It's a co-occurring illness. When I did do some research, you know, diabetes is regarded as the seventh leading cause of death in the United States. And, you know, the condition can be caused when we look at an autoimmune disease. That causes diabetes in adolescents, and it's usually regarded as type 1 diabetes, meaning a lot of people are on insulin from an early age, okay? So type 2 diabetes is something that occurs later in life, and it affects probably 80% of the diabetics in our community. And it's the most common, and it's generally related to obesity and age. And of course, we are learning more and more that it's related to sleep apnea, and we'll go into the reasons why later. So there is a lot of people that do have both of these syndromes, sleep apnea and diabetes. The question is sometimes which came first, okay? And I think we'll explain that later on, or I hope to explain that later on, looking at some of the risks and the characteristics that are related to both syndromes. Okay, so we can go to the next slide.
Yeah, just to talk a little bit about my experience. Most of the people in my on my maternal side of my family have both sleep apnea and diabetes. Usually the diabetes was... at least, you know, all these years ago, was found first as the first condition that they had. And then as they got older, sleep apnea came into play. But that was kind of before, you know, my mom is in her 70s, my uncle's over 80. It didn't really hear about sleep apnea in their when they were in their 40s, you know, like me. So
Justin, you may be familiar, the link or part of it may be due to the fact that sleep apnea and diabetes do share some risk factors. And from what I've read, obesity and cardiovascular disease seem to be the top two. So if we look at some of those symptoms of obstructive sleep apnea, we can see, you know, obviously we do have excessive daytime sleepiness, fatigue, loud snoring. And, you know, any of the research that I did was a lot of those are related to just feeling fatigued all the time, not wanting to exercise, overweight, a bit obese, maybe carrying the weight in the mid-abdomen as a high risk for both conditions. And, you know, again, unfortunately for men, erectile dysfunction can be a symptom of sleep apnea. So, you know, we always see... the two diseases or two syndromes are actually interconnected, and that's why sometimes they feel that there's a lack of understanding of which came first. Does sleep apnea cause diabetes, or the fact that you do have diabetes puts you at higher risk of sleep apnea? And later I think I'll maybe look at some of the studies that I'd looked at that, you know, are out there in some of the research that people had looked into both syndromes in trying to figure out the link. And I'm sure those symptoms are similar to maybe what you've seen in some of your family members, Justine, yeah?
Yes.
No, I think, you know, one of the big things too that I, wanted to look at is obesity is a risk factor for heart disease. And then, like I said earlier, heart disease causes actually sleep apnea. And then both syndromes cause type 2 diabetes. So there is that big link and big risk there just through our comorbidities that people are experiencing. So some of the symptoms too, I think I touched on some of these with type 2 diabetes, is feel like they can never quench their thirst. They're always drinking all the time. Some of that is because the blood sugar in your level, or your, sorry, the blood sugar level is so high that it actually just makes you just want to drink all the time and flush it through almost. It's that physiological wake-up call to say, I just need this flushed out of my symptom or system. Extreme fatigue is sometimes obviously in both conditions, and we see that a lot with type 2 diabetes, especially if it's not controlled very well. So if you think about the food that we get is our energy. and it's broken down properly. But if you're not utilizing that energy, it's stored as fat, leading to obesity and lethargy, fatigue, not wanting to exercise. And oddly enough, some people, when they're actually initially diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, do lose some weight. And there is an instance where, you know, people have experienced lack of control in their sugars that can lead to, if you get a normal cut or wound or breakdown in your skin, for example, that it just takes so long to heal. And that, again, just speaks to the fact that the blood is just so engorged with sugar, for the want of a better word, and it's not getting all those heal properties to the wound to heal and repair the body. So that can be an indication as well. Some of the other signs that people have said are, you know, red or swollen gums, tingling or numb in the hands or feet, more like the extremities, would be what we would call in the medical field as diabetic nephropathy. And some people have blurred vision where it's diabetic retinopathy. And so if you're experiencing some of these things, it's time to get a checkup, and it's a simple test. A lot of these things are really diagnosed through a simple blood test. And if your sugar or hemoglobin A1C, then it's time to look at lifestyle adjustments and or medication.
No, I was just thinking back a little bit. I mentioned before about, you know, my mom, and I just remember that, you know, when she was working full time, you know, when I was, you know, even in high school or what have you, you know, she had started to gain a little bit of weight, and that's kind of what pushed her into the whole diabetes realm. Now that she's in her 70s and retired, she's actually, you know, made a concerted effort to lose some weight, exercise a little more. I can't say that it is, you know, brought it 100% in check with, you know, in check and has gone away, but it's definitely gotten better. So, you know, making those lifestyle choices, at least for her, you know, put her in a better place, you know, in regards to taking medicines and how she was feeling and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. And Justin, may I ask, did your mom also have obstructive sleep apnea?
Yes, she does.
She does, yeah. You know, because we do see that, you know, if you have diabetes, sleep apnea can make it actually difficult to manage your diabetes. And, you know, this is basically that when you're stopping breathing and you're having pauses or fragmented sleep or disruptive sleep, it actually increases the carbon dioxide in your blood. And this leads to insulin resistance. So again, what I said earlier, the body's not repairing itself. It's not getting the nutrients it needs to repair. And during the night, when everything should be sorting itself out and repairing for the next day, it's not utilizing insulin effectively. So the correlation there is to treat the sleep apnea as well. And hopefully be as adherent to your therapy as possible. And people and studies that I have seen in the past have actually saw an improvement. In a 2-week study that was done out of Chicago, most people's blood sugar levels were better maintained if they were adherent to 2 weeks of 8 hours each night of their therapy. So next slide. And if you do type 1 diabetes, or if you do have type 1 diabetes, again, that's something that, you know, usually occurs in adolescence and is usually what we used to regard as insulin-dependent diabetes. Type 2 diabetes, it used to be called non-insulin-dependent diabetes. That's the diabetes that happens later in life through lifestyle, obesity, now we're learning, sleep apnea. And again, it's 90% of all diabetic cases, and caused basically because the body is not utilizing the insulin as it should. A lot of people are maintained and get regulation from their sleep apnea and So a lot of people with type 2 diabetes do get some better control with their blood sugar when they are adherent to their CPAP therapy. And we have seen that in some studies that I researched. But again, when you're not, and the body has this inflammatory response during the night, when sleep is fragmented, when you are hypoxic, for example, and there's an oxidative level or free radicals, for the want of a better word, going through the system, then the insulin isn't being utilized as best as it should. And that's what causes diabetes later in life. There is another symptom. I know we didn't really touch much on it, but some people do develop gestational diabetes during pregnancy. Most people, it happens, and there are risks, of course, to the mom and baby related to gestational diabetes. But they did find in studies related to gestational diabetes that people are at risk of developing type 2 diabetes later in life if they don't make some lifestyle changes. So sleep apnea, again, like we said, can influence type 2 diabetes. And, you know, when we look at the insufficient sleep alters hormone balance, like I said earlier, and that can lead to weight, can lead to weight gain. It can lead to lack of exercise, lack of motivation. Sometimes your eating habits are all wrong because you're not sleeping well at night, and you may get up and have a snack and try and read something and, you know, get back to sleep again. But generally speaking, you know, increased calories lead to increased weight if you're not exercising and utilizing them properly. And of course, that causes the blood sugar to rise. A decrease in sleep along with obesity can, of course, increase the risk, like I said, of type 2 diabetes. And for some of the people I see in my clinic that are mainly kidney patients that can develop type 1 diabetes that's poorly controlled, unfortunately, can lead to kidney failure, you know, either early in life. I've seen people even in their 20s needing a kidney transplant, or later in life when that sugar just engorges the small vessels in the kidney and the blood and filtration system is compromised. So, you know, there's lots of risks out there for diabetes. And if we think about some of the treatments, sleep apnea and therapy with using your mask every night is something that I feel that if people realize some of the risks down the line, they would be more inclined to go and seek treatment. And doctors out there in their offices, when they see people that fit that demographic of obesity, developing type 2 diabetes, and the risk of snoring, should do both. They should do both studies. They should do a panel to check for risk of diabetes, and also a sleep study to look to see if someone is experiencing sleep apnea.
I was just going to say, you know, my personal experience with, you know, with my family in regards to type 2 diabetes, you were talking a little bit about, you know, eating and food. And you know, sometimes I remember it kind of got into this place of, you know, you're feeling the fatigue, you're feeling the drag. And so it's something quick, with some type of quick carbohydrate sugary thing, you know, that just sends you into that consistent cycle. I mean, it's true for all of us, whether you're feeling that way because of, you know, a insulin issue that's going on, or you had a, you know, are not getting a good night's sleep because of apnea, or just had a bad night's sleep. You know, sometimes the donut at 2 p.m. in the afternoon sounds like a good idea to give that extra, you know, little boost. But that's, you know, it's important, I think, for people to take note of how they're feeling during the day and, you know, kind of what you're prone to gravitate, you know, towards. And if, you know, I think that's a sign that people should take back to their doctor when they see him or her.
Yeah, of course. Great point. And, you know, especially nighttime eating, you know, we're looking at things like, you know, whatever you eat at night is you're not really working it off per se, and you're not utilizing that energy. So it sort of sits on you all night, and that just leads to increased weight gain, which, of course, we all know is a risk as well for sleep apnea. So this graph here is actually quite interesting. And when I looked at it, I mean, again, it sort of reiterates what I'd said earlier when we look at sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea, which leads to intermittent hypoxia, you know, that starvation of good oxygen to your brain and vital organs. And sleep fragmentation leads to all these different, you know, sympathetic inflammation, oxidative stress, hypothalamic pituitary that's not working properly, and all these can then lead to insulin resistance. And our patients do see that later in life when their obstructive sleep apnea is not well controlled. And it's just another sign and symptom that people should be aware of out there, that they may be at risk of developing both if their sleep apnea is not well controlled.
I was just going to say, I mean, for, you know, decades now, we've been hearing about nutrition and exercise. And I, you know, within the past 10 years or so, sleep is really taking become on the same level as that. And it is really important. It's just as important as, you know, as we've said in all the other talks that you and I have had, just as important as what you're feeding yourself and, you know, getting out there and moving around. I mean, it's all an equal playing field. And when you off balance, this is, you know, this is what this graph is showing.
Sure. You know, and just to bring it back to some of my patient populations in the kidney donor world, if somebody wanted to be a living kidney donor, I remember one woman wanted to donate to her husband, and her ethnic background put her at risk of diabetes, plus her weight and her food choices, definitely. And you know, she actually initially was declined as a suitable donor for borderline sugar that was elevated. You know, her glucose levels were elevated. And she was so committed, and she did go and make lifestyle changes. And 6 months later, all her blood work looked great. You know, and at the time, that was not a correlation or a link that I even brought together. You know, it's something moving forward in my practice that I would say to people, if you are at risk and you develop in type 2 diabetes or you're borderline, they feel that in the future you may develop it later in life, it is probably worthwhile to go and have a sleep study as well and ask some questions around their sleep habits. So, you know, lesson learned for us all. But again, lifestyle changes, cutting down on, you know, this lady was having rice actually with three times a day. And, you know, the carbohydrates is like, you know, in our body then is used as sugar, and it was just leading to central obesity, and she wasn't really exercising. But once she'd done that for 6 months, her blood work looked great. So, you know, when we look at glucose levels, they usually hit their peak within about 90 minutes of a meal. And those with type 2 diabetes should keep their blood levels around 60 milligrams per deciliter, it's called. So you'll see different parameters out there, different things and different borderlines of sort of where you should be after a meal, where you should be before a meal. But generally speaking, that's a good place to be. And again, like I said, carbohydrates are broken down into glucose sugar, which raises the blood sugar level if they're not utilized in energy. So reducing that carbohydrate intake can help with your blood sugar levels. So a lot of people, you know, you do hear even some of our patients out there say, yeah, I have sugar or I have sugar diabetes. And they do think it's like, you know, I don't eat a lot of sweets. I don't have cakes. I don't have pastries. But think about it as your complex carbohydrates like your rice, your potatoes, you know, anything that's broken down to a glucose, which ultimately is used as sugar in the body, will raise those glucose levels. So be mindful of those types of foods will have an impact on your sugar level. Okay. So it's not just the fact that you don't have sweet things or sugar. It's how the body actually utilizes and breaks down carbohydrates.
I was going to say, I'm guessing the peak that you're talking about is kind of that time frame when people might want to take a siesta after a meal because you know, whether you have it actually at lunch or at dinner, you know, all of a sudden everything is, you know, starting to be processed and, you know, you just come down like, oh, I should take a little bit of a nap.
Yeah, exactly. And we've all experienced that. Like you said, you know, you want the 2 p.m. donut or you want instant gratification by something like that's quick and carbohydrate based, for example. And you get that little surge. And then, you know, once the body does take care of it and insulin does happen and, you know, it's utilized, hopefully, then you actually come down again. And sometimes you come down harder than you initially were. And these things aren't really pick-me-ups. They're actually, you know, they give you a little boost, but when you come down, you drop a little bit harder.
Yep, yep. I think we've all been there with the Snickers bar. That's their whole ad campaign, right?
So, I mean, this slide, too, it speaks to some of the things that I have been looking at. And, you know, there's not an awful lot of research out there regarding, you know, weight in good clinical trials. You know, we all know that it is a risk factor for sleep apnea, especially what we would call central obesity. But definitely what I did read out there is, you know, when there is a good control of your sleep apnea, there was some study.
That's it, folks. Tune in for another round of Biotech Beat, same time next week.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9.